Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in, Sports City Chef fans. I'm your host, Brian Hughes, and we have a show for you tonight. The NFL free-for-all show is about to jump straight at you. We've been, unfortunately, incognito the last couple weeks. We've had some technical issues. We've had some personal issues, but we're back here to help you once again forget about your worries, forget about your strife, if you will. Hakuna Matata, as they say. And who better to help me Hakuna Matata with than my co-host, Mr. Norm Arendez. Norm, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. Ready to go.
Doing good.
Norm, I appreciate you joining in. I think it's important that the folks out there know that Norm is actually on vacation. He's in Wisconsin, and he's still here. So, Norm, big props to you. And don't think that the people in Wisconsin will not be listening when we start talking about the greatest dynasties. You might have to whisper if it's anyone other than that town nearby. You know what I mean?
I'm actually sitting outside. That way my in-laws can't hear me not put the Packers on the list.
Okay, well, that's awesome. We do have another caller here in queue. I believe this is my boy Sirius, but the caller from the 703 – thanks for joining us tonight. How you doing tonight?
You know, gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys on another edition of the NFL Free-for-All. That was good.
Well, Sirius, I appreciate you also stopping by here, man. We've had so much propaganda, political, social issues, so many other things that distract our attention right now. But you know what? I think it's important for all of us to also understand that not just the NFL, but we have baseball around the corner. We have a schedule in place now for basketball. Boys, we have sports back. And you know what? Maybe it's just me, but I feel like everything's a little bit better when sports are back. So I am. I do have a little upbeat in my little kick in the pants, if you will, and I'm a little bit more optimistic about everything. I try to keep high spirits whenever I can. But I do want to start the show off with what I believe to be some good news, and I know that this is something that we're all aware of. But yesterday afternoon, Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport reported that Cam Newton was signing a one-year contract with the New England Patriots. I know a lot of people said, hey, this isn't going to happen. I know a lot of other people were like, this was destined to happen. Let's just start with that question at first. Norm, what's your thoughts on Cam Newton signing in New England? And does this now make New England the team to beat in the AFC East again?
No, I think if Belichick wanted to bring in Cam Newton and try to, you know, build an offense around, or not even around him, but just with him, he'd have done so a lot sooner in free agency. I mean, when you got, you know, potentially 20 teams that could pick him up, you know, on a pretty fair contract, he would have struck a lot sooner. I think this signing's just Bill Belichick taking a guy who's worth more value, bought him on a cheap, And I don't see Cam Newton really playing at all, and that's why it's an incentive-laden deal. He's not going to hit his incentives no matter what. And I don't think Cam Newton stays there for all 16 weeks. I think the second one starting quarterback goes down, he's going to trade him for a third, fourth-round pick, and he'll look like a damn genius again.
All right, that's interesting. That's definitely an interesting line of thinking because, you know, I mean, that's the beauty of this show is that we all have alternating opinions because I know it's incentive laden, but to me, I think Cam Newton is clearly the best quarterback on this team. And I think that Bill Belichick is also somebody that's a little egotistical. And if Brady goes to Tampa Bay and has the type of success that I believe he's going to have, and New England falls flat on his face, what does that do to Bill Belichick's legacy? And Sirius, I'm going to come over to you, and you can expound on everything else, but what about that last piece? What do you think about that? Do you think that that was maybe a motivating factor in why he got signed?
You know, I mean, everybody thought this deal would get done. I think the surprising thing for a lot of people, and I'm not one of them, and I'll say here in a minute, is how long it took for this deal to get done or for Cam to get signed. I mean, the Carolina Panthers made no bones about it. They released him significantly early on in the process. You know, and teams drafted, you know, quarterbacks. They signed free agent quarterbacks. They re-upped their different quarterbacks. And the only team that seemed to be, you know, just laying in the cut, chilling, so to speak, were the New England Patriots. You know, and so I'm like, yo, what in the world is going on? Now, for me, you know, I didn't think Cam would end up in New England. I didn't think that would ever happen because he does not fit the mold. He doesn't look, I mean, he doesn't look like a New England guy. You know what I'm saying? He's flashy. He, you know, shops in the business department of supermarkets. You know, he's loud, he's boisterous. He dances after every first down. I mean, that's not a New England type of guy. Like, you understand that Brady was there, but at the end of the day, like, these people get fined for spiking football unless you're wrong, you know. So the ultimate charismatic quarterback gets paired with ultimately the biggest Debbie Downer, no fun guy in the NFL. I didn't think this marriage would take place. Obviously it did. I disagree with Norm. I don't think he gets traded. I think he actually goes over there and falls out. Keep in mind, you have two guys that have something to prove. You have two guys who want to prove that they are better than the naysayers. Everybody's talking about Brady being the GOAT. Brady being this, you know, Belichick can't win without Brady. Brady's going, you know, Belichick's going to be like, really? Okay, whatever. Cam Newton, you know, we've all seen the video of him working out, you know, talking about they gave up on me, they quit on me. You know, he goes to New England with something to prove, you know. So I think this is actually going to work out pretty well. And also keep in mind, my man Steve Lazar said this on my post earlier today. Josh McDaniels turned Tim Tebow into a serviceable quarterback. What in the world do you think he's going to be able to do with the likes of Cam Newton?
Let me expand on that, Brian. So like you guys are saying about Belichick wanting to show his legacy without Brady, that's another, to me, that's a point why Cam will not play. Let's just say he starts Cam Newton, you know, does his thing with rushing, this and that. What are we going to say? Bill Belichick did it or did Cam Newton do it? So I think Belichick would get more relish out of going 11-5, and not saying they can, but he would get more out of that with a Jarrett Stidham at quarterback because that would then prove, no, I'm the guy who does it. It's my system, not the quarterback.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually agree with you, Norm. I think if he thought that they could go 11-5 with Jarrett Stidham, I think that he would have never signed Cam because here's my line of thinking. You have a MVP caliber quarterback. I don't care what any of the naysayers said. I mean, you're talking about less than 4 years ago, this guy was the MVP of the league. You don't lose your talent like that in 4 years. He was injured. So you're going to sign an MVP caliber quarterback to back up a guy who's never taken a snap under center? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. The pressure is already immense coming in and trying to fill the shoes of Tom Brady. Who better to fill those shoes than somebody who's already established, who's already a household name, who already knows what it takes to get to the Super Bowl, who already knows what it takes to be in a winning environment, a proven leader? I just think that that's a better situation. Now, the one point that you make that I really can't rebuke is why did it take so long to get done? And the only thing I can tell you on that front is 1 year, $7.5 million, and most of it's laid money, it's incentive-driven. Think about that for a moment. So the Patriots are notorious for always lowballing people. They're notorious for everybody always talks about how in the quote-unquote third and fourth phases of free agency, that's when the Patriots come in, swoop in, will grab an aging veteran or grab somebody who's talented or who was very talented that couldn't get the multi-year deal a la Jadeveon Clowney, will swoop in, give him a one-year prove-it deal, and then he'll ball out. Because most people in that system, they do. They ball out. So the thought process here to me is the reason this took so long, I don't believe for a second that all of a sudden after the draft, like, a month and a half after the draft, the Patriots all of a sudden said, "Hey, you know what, boys? I don't think we're good at quarterback. We should look around at the market." I think they've been in contact with Cam Newton this entire time, and it's taken to this point for Cam Newton and his representation to realize, "Hey, you know what? I don't have another deal out there. I wish I did. I wish I even had the Andy Dalton 2 year, $17 million deal, but I don't." Am I a better quarterback? Mm-hmm. Probably. Am I a better quarterback than a lot of these guys that are getting 3 years, $23 million as a backup quarterback? Probably. But this is an opportunity for me to come in and lead this team back to the playoffs. And if you think, and this is just my opinion, I'm not chastising, but if you think that Cam Newton would sign a contract without at the very least, a verbal agreement or something on their part that he's going to be able to compete for the starting job, like, hey, we want you just to come in and mentor Jared Stidham, I think you're crazy. I think he absolutely is coming in to take this job in his mind, and I don't think he has any thought about, hey, I'm going to try and prep this guy for the future. So there has to be some kind of quote-unquote handshake deal that, hey, we're going to let you compete for the starting spot. Because here's the thing, Norman, and this would be maybe the better question to ask. If you have no intention of starting Cam Newton, what would be the point of bringing him in? I know you're saying the compensation, but think about the added pressure that's going to put on this kid every time he makes a bad pass, a bad read. You're going to start hearing grumblings of we want Cam. Like, what would be the purpose of bringing him in that point?
No, and you know, like you said, on the roster, the best quarterback they now have is Cam Newton. I'll answer your question, and then I'll kind of go back for a second. Again, you talk about the pressure that Stidham would have, and he's going to make a lot of mistakes, but when you have this guy here, but there's no guarantee Cam's going to come in and dominate. We all look at Cam for what he was and what he was capable of doing, and now you have a very disciplined offense, a certain structure, and he could blossom. I mean, he could freaking ball out, or he could fall flat. And like I said, you have to look at like the way the Patriots, and I shouldn't say the way Belichick, he's not one of these youthful coaches like, oh, we're gonna do this. Oh, he's very low key. We do the same shit. We get to third and three, and we get it somehow. He's very just methodical. And it's very easy for a young quarterback to thrive in that system as long as you can hit your target. You know, I mean, so the guys get open, they create it. And so, you know, he doesn't necessarily need this monster playmaker quarterback. That's just my opinion on the Patriots. Now, to backpedal there, like I said, the time – if Cleveland Browns or anyone else – because Cleveland's the only team I heard about that was interested. If anyone else came in and snagged up Cam Newton 2 months ago, what are the Patriots going to do? Well, they've proven they're just going to roll the season through with Stidham. So I'm telling you right now, the entire offseason, this entire freaking last 4 months, they've been basing their entire offense, everything they're going to do around Stidham. And just because they landed Cam Newton, they're not going to say, okay, let's bring him in and get him prepped. Fuck that. I just think the Patriots are going to roll the way they do. And I think he'd rather go 9-7 with Stidham and let Cam Newton sit on the bench and cut him next year if no one gets injured. That's just my opinion. Because the Patriots,
that way.
But,
you know, and you know what, Norton, that's what the show is about, though, man, is
yeah.
You know, if you came in here and you agreed with everything I said, it'd be a pretty boring show. So I appreciate
It's going to be funny.
I mean, honestly.
It's going to be fun to see it play out. Let's put it that way, because I'm not saying I'm right. It's going to be fun to see it play out. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, gentlemen, there is no way in the world that, again, I mean, I respect what my man Norm's trying to say here, you know, but there is no way in the world that the New England Patriots go out and sign Cam Newton. I mean, if they wanted to have somebody come in and just fill a spot or whatever the case may be, they can go to the neighborhood Walmart, pick up somebody from aisle number 3 and put them on the roster, because that's what they seem to do with wide receivers. You don't go sign Cam Newton. You don't go sign that guy. Bring them into your building. Have them sit behind a no-namer. If A, you're not trying to compete, and B, you don't think that he can get the job done. Again, my biggest thing with this whole song and dance, you know, again, like I said initially, you know, it took forever in the day. And again, I'm kind of agreeing with what my man Hugh said and what others on my Facebook and social media outlets have said. You know what I'm saying? They may have been in conversations. Cam may have to come down on the number. You know, he had to see what other people were getting, you know. And I think somebody was in Cam's ear was like, yo, bruh, take a 1-year prove-it deal. Prove that you still got it. Prove that you're healthy. Because let's keep in mind, based off of what I'm understanding, nobody was knocking down Cam Newton's door to bring him in for a tryout. Nobody was knocking down Cam Newton's door trying to, you know, bring him in because everybody and their mother is scared of his injury history. This is a man that has not completed a full 16-game season since his MVP year. You know what I'm saying? This man got smacked around in that Super Bowl and ain't been right since. You know what I'm saying? And that was 4 or 5 years ago. So I nobody was coming in trying to give him a job, trying to, you know, give him an opportunity. So somebody had to get in his ear and be like, yo, bro, go over to New England. You know what I'm saying? Link up with Belichick and Josh McDaniels. You know, learn the Patriot way. Do what you got to do. Keep your mouth shut. Ball out. And on the backside of next year, then you can start flexing and getting your money when the TV deal is kicking in and when the money is more lucrative and you have shown these teams that, yo, I am that dude. I'm back. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I respect this gangster. I'm just shocked that, you know, it's the Patriots. I would have thought it would have been some type of, you know, the Chargers or, you know, something like that. Because I'm not a fan of what they did, but wow, the Patriots
are good
again.
All right, boys. I do think that there's one other element to this story that we should talk about here real quick before we move on to the real meat and potatoes of the show, and that is, so Richard Sherman, as you guys know, has never been shy about publicly expressing his frustration or opinion. So after Cam Newton signed a 1-year, $7.5 million late incentive deal, Sherman went to Twitter and basically posted, "Can anybody else tell me a time in which a former NFL MVP had to sign a 1-year prove-it deal when less talented quarterbacks are making $15 or $16 million a year as a backup?" Norm, what's your thoughts on that? Do you think that this is more indicative of the market, or do you think this is more indicative of his injury history? What do you think the circumstances are on why there wasn't a bigger market for Cam Newton?
Yeah, well, to answer Richard Sherman's question, the answer is never. And, I mean, it's a valid point, but unfortunately, you know, the NFL – you know, with the way the salary cap structured and what you have to pay your top end people, when they're, we'll call them top five in the league, your money starts running out. Although, and the Patriots don't have a lot of cash. You would be shocked because they're one of the programs that, you know, thinks very responsible there, but they have a lot of dead money this year. But at the end of the day, you know, why isn't Cam Newton wanted by Dallas? Why wasn't he wanted by the Chargers? Why? I don't know why. And I'll tell you this, I didn't watch a ton of Cam Newton. I'm an AFC West guy, AFC. But Cam Newton is a big guy that could move quick. He has a strong arm. I don't know how accurate he was. I just never watched him enough. I liked watching him play. He's a big, strong guy, great athlete. At the end of the day, if you had to ask me what is Cam Newton, I just see him as more of a mobile quarterback that's just bigger than everybody, kind of like a Big Ben, you know, hard to take down, big guy. So, if your offense needs a precise quarterback that's accurate, with knowledgeable of the game, I'm not so sure Cam Newton's one of the top 10 that comes to my mind on that. He's a great athlete, great player, and I think maybe that might be it. That's just a pure guess because – going back to the question, why did you get him so cheap when he's a former Pro Bowler? Yeah, I mean, there's really no reason for it, you know? But that's just what I came up with.
All right, serious thing question to you. You heard Richard Sherman's comments. What's your thoughts on this? Why do you think Cam Newton had to sign such a not only short deal but cheap deal? Do you think it has to do with timing? Do you think it has to do with injury saturation in the market? Well, what's your thoughts?
You know, honestly, it's a combo of a few things. For starters, you know, you're looking at Cam Newton, again, like I said a little bit ago, everybody and their mother is scared of his injury history. You know what I'm saying? So you have to take that into account. You really do. And again, I'm typically on a Richard Sherman bandwagon for what he says. A lot of times, you know, it kind of feels kind of racial, sort of speak. And again, I get it. You know what I'm saying? And especially dealing with the climate that this world is in, I get it. But at some point, you have to deal with the reality of the situation. Cam Newton is a fragile dude who is trying to prove it to himself, the league, that he still got it, okay? Keep in mind, gentlemen, this is a guy who only completes about 58% of the passes, okay, over the course of his career. He's been sacked a total of 291 times with a career QBR of 86.1. So, again, I'm not even going to go into the racial aspect of things, just speaking from a quarterback perspective, okay? You know what I'm saying? Cam Newton, he's not an actual quarterback. He's a running back who throws the football. He's never been able to really step back, read a defense, hit his back foot, and throw to an accurate target. Now, granted, he hasn't had legitimate targets, you know what I'm saying, other than Calvin Benjamin over the course of his career. But at the end of the day, this is the Cam Newton that we're signing right now. Former MVP, nobody's negating his MVP season. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's negating his gangster. He's one hell of a quarterback. But, you know, for Richard Sherman, Cam Newton has to prove it, okay? And no teams were coming at him with an Andy Dalton deal. No teams were coming at him with, you know, a future Patrick Mahomes deal or anything like that. Cam Newton had to get his foot in the door. This is an entry-level position. You know what I'm saying? We're all businessmen here. When you graduate or when you first want to get your foot into a door, you know what I'm saying, you have to take yourself an entry position, do what you're supposed to do. And again, he found the right team to do it with. He found the right dancing partner. You know what I'm saying? Go in there, mind your P's and Q's, stay out of trouble, stay off the field stuff, do your homework, play ball, stay healthy, capitalize on it next year. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, Cam Newton had to prove it. This is essentially a prove-it deal.
Yeah, I can buy that. I think, in my opinion, I think that this is kind of a perfect storm. And I appreciate that, Sirius. I don't think this is motivated by race or anything like that. I think what you have is, during a time frame in which we have an influx of young quarterbacks – that are showing that even as rookies, that they can play and play exceptionally well. You have an aging veteran. I'm not saying he's old, but an aging veteran that's coming off of a very severe injury that literally missed all of last season. I don't think he's better than I don't think Andy Dalton is better than him, and I know Andy Dalton got a multi-year deal basically to back up Dak Prescott. But you know what you're getting in Andy Dalton. Very consistent. He's the same guy in and out, and you can live with that. You know, Cam might be fantastic, but he also could be injured and not play this year. We don't know. I mean, we've seen the tape, but we haven't seen him play in live action. So I think a lot of owners are going to be scared off by that, because the other thing you got to consider is you're not going to probably have a quote-unquote traditional training camp. You're not going to have a lot of padded practices where people are hitting each other and you're getting live action drills and things like that. So you're really not going to know what you have return on investment wise until probably like week two or three of the NFL season. And at that point, that's a long way down the road to figure out whether or not you're in a good spot or not. So that's what I see. We do have another caller that calling in from the 404. Caller from the 404, you're on with the NFL Free For All show. How you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, man? It's Knox.
Is it Knox? Hey, what's up, man?
Yes, sir.
So we're talking a little Cam Newton right now. We're talking about the fact that as a former league MVP, he had to sign a one-year, $7.5 million late incentive deal, and essentially that we couldn't find one other time in the history of the NFL that an MVP on his next contract had to sign a singular year deal. Now, obviously, there's extenuating factors, but we're just basically getting everybody's thoughts on that. You know, this is something Richard Sherman had brought up. What's your thoughts on Cam Newton having to settle for a one-year prove-it deal in New England, and is this the right spot for him to prove it?
Well, we talked about this before, man. It's basically a layer cake. So there's race involved, there's the injury history involved, there's when Carolina released him, there's a new crop of young QBs who you can't put him on the roster, whose agents would never allow you to sign him. So it's like all of that stuff is in play. It's not one more than the other. All of that came into play to kind of push Cam into the situation that he's in. If he's healthy, this is the ultimate scratch-off ticket. New England paid for a $10 scratch-off. And it hit. Like, if he's healthy, we know what he can do. If he's not, you lose nothing because you didn't pay anything. So we'll probably see Cam retire, and, you know, that would be the end of his career, like, if he's not healthy. Because the injuries he had were the injuries that took away his ability to make big plays in the passing game, which was his strength. He wasn't the most accurate quarterback, but he could make chunk plays. And those chunk plays, along with his short yardage running, meant they could sustain drives even without a lot of talent around him. So that's why Cam has been so good, you know, for his career. But if he can't do those two things anymore, then, you know, we'll probably be looking at retirement. But as far as New England, this is win-win. Like, there's no way this goes bad on you. If he doesn't play, then you have to start Stidham, which you planned on doing before, and you keep it moving.
That's a good point. Well, guys, I think we've beaten up the Cam Newton topic to death. So I do want to talk. I think it's always interesting to reflect on the history of the game, and to reflect on, you know, people throw around the word dynasty a lot. You know, oh man, you know, the Seahawks are a dynasty. You know, or oh man, the Niners are a dynasty, or oh, you know, the Patriots are a dynasty. And we don't really look into, like, what does that mean? What does it mean to be a dynasty? And what does it mean to be, you know, essentially consistently good? And we talk about these dynasties, but do we ever really go back and look at teams from yesteryear, go back to the 70s, the 80s, or even the 60s or the 50s, and really look at, you know, what were the quote-unquote dynasties of that era, and how do they stack up to the dynasties of this era? And ultimately, what our topic tonight is, boys, is we're looking at the dynasties of the NFL and essentially discussing what is the greatest dynasty in NFL history and why. So it could be, for example, it could be, hey, you know what? I like the Minnesota Vikings. You know, you look at what they were able to accomplish, you know, with that front four, you know, pretty incredible when you look at, you know, their win percentage being over 70%. It could be the Steel Curtain, the Steelers from the 70s under Chuck Knoll. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different options, but I don't think we ever really discuss it and really talk about why we think these teams were so good and were able to sustain that success. So with that said, Norm, I'm going to come over to you first. And why don't you give me your top two or three dynasties and just a quick reason why these two or three made your list.
Yeah, the key with calling teams dynasties, I think people are quick to call in teams dynasties. They've been good for a few years. You know, for me, you have to sustain good, and I don't mean you have to win, you know, 5 out of 10 Super Bowls. It just means you have to be at the top and a threat. For me, yeah, it's got to be at least close knocking on the door to 10 years. And so, you know, when I look back on it, there's a lot of great teams in the past, but, you know, the Patriots, obviously, and this will show my age too, but the Patriots – you know, have been on a 20-year run of relevancy. They've won a ton, and every year they lost in playoffs, the whole world except for everyone in that little spot in the U.S. was rejoicing because everyone hates the Patriots because they're good. They win. So they're obviously there. I remember when I first really started watching football, you know, I missed the Walsh era, but I kind of caught the tail end when Seifert was coach, you know, and then, you know, they went from Montana to Young, and then here comes Harbaugh. He got in the Super Bowl, and then here they are back at the Super Bowl last year. The Niners, I think, you know, had a phenomenal run through the 80s and mid-90s. I think they were a dynasty at that point. And you know, the Cowboys came to mind, but I kind of trumped them. I went for the Dolphins. And I liked the Dolphins because, obviously, I think they owned in the 70s. I wasn't watching football, but I just remember they had the perfect season, and I kind of followed them a little bit, and I got to watch Dan Marino a little bit, who always made that team relevant. So those were my three. I was the Patriots, Niners, and Miami Dolphins.
Is that the order too? 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, I think that's how I'd put it. Yep.
All right. Sirius, so we know you're a Steelers fan, but Norm just gave us his list. He's got Patriots, the current dynasty, if you will, as the number one dynasty. Yeah. He's got the 49ers of the 80s as number two. And then he had at number three, the Dolphins of the 70s. What say you?
You know, honestly, man, it's going to be very hard for me to wear my Homer hat here. I try not to do that too much on these type of shows, but the Steelers obviously are number one on this list. You know, Steelers of the 70s, you know, really between Chuck Knoll, between Terry Bradshaw, Len Swan, the Steel Curtain, Mean Joe, Kevin Green, Jack Ham. I can name the whole damn roster. So, you know, Mel Blunt, Tony Dungy, I can name the whole roster for what they've been able to do and kind of, you know, set the bar for just hard-hitting defenses and, you know, early 70s, you know. This was before my time, but I remember my dad sitting me down and watching game tape on this when I was born in 84. The 49ers were already mentioned. I'm going to leave some stuff for my man Nas to pick up. Since I'm sitting here, and I hate to do this. My man said the Dolphins. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos, 1983 to 1998. This was a team that went on a tremendous run under John Elway. I mean, they went 90-52 in their first 9 seasons losing the Super Bowl, but, you know, they ended up getting over the edge and 1-1. So I'm going to go Broncos here. I don't want to really play with the Bills too much because you got to finish. You have to finish. Let's see. Scrolling through here. I really wasn't a fan of the Vikings. Giants, they're killing me here. You know what, hell, I live here in Metro D.C. We'll go with the Redskins. We'll go with the Redskins. Nah, I live here in Metro D.C. watching here. I go with the Redskins. But the old Redskins with Joe Gibbs and Dougie Williams and company doing some things, getting 3 Super Bowls in a 12-year span. So, number one, Steelers. Number two, was the Denver Broncos, and the number three, the Washington Redskins.
All right, guys. So we got some Steely love. We got some Denver Bronco love. What say you? Greatest dynasty in NFL franchise history. Who makes Nas's list as the three greatest dynasties in your opinion?
Yeah, man. I would like to go off the board, but I think they were saying the right answer. So I'm kind of going to echo a lot of what they said. Number one, I hate to say it, but I got to go New England just because they've done this during free agency and the salary cap period. The league is a lot more competitive. You don't have a situation where half the franchises don't even really have a draft, staff or watch tape or are owned by somebody who doesn't even, look at their record. Like the NFL is a totally different monster than the days of, Green Bay and all of that. So I got to go New England first. Second, I'm going to go San Fran. I think that Bill Walsh era is probably the most important era in football. The coaching tree is humongous. The amount of people who took his system and implemented it, it made the league a passing league once people started to figure out, hey, short passes kind of beats knocking your head into the ground. And you can sustain success. And you saw that from each coaching staff and taking their program across the league. And third, that's Sirius's team. And I'm going to go with those Steelers, man. They had a draft where they had 4 Hall of Famers in it. I think like some early 70s draft. They had 4 Hall of Famers in one draft. They've only had, 3 coaches since the early or late 60s? Like, sustained excellence, man. You just got to give it up to them. Their system works. And guess what? If they draft a wide receiver, you can pretty much bet that dude's going to be pretty good. Like, the Steelers, man. I get it.
I can appreciate that, Nas. Thank you. And you stole my thunder a little bit, but I appreciate that. I also have the Patriots as number one, but it's not for the reasons that a lot of people think. I don't think that they're the most dominant franchise when you go back and look at actual statistics. But like you said, they've done all this, guys, during free agency. They've done this over a course of period in which they've lost 14 Pro Bowlers, 8 All-Pros, and 5 Hall of Famers. Let that sink in. Over the last 20 years, they've lost 14 Pro Bowl players, 8 All-Pro players, and 5 Hall of Famers, or guys that are going to be Hall of Famers very soon. So when you look at the sustained success, it's hard to compare a team like the 1930s Green Bay Packers, right? Under the Lombardi, because they had like 10, 12 Hall of Famers and they never had any concern of those guys leaving. So yeah, they won 7 titles. They went to 7 title games. They won a bunch, but they did it under completely different circumstances. So I'm going number one. I'm also going New England. Number two, I'm going San Francisco for every reason that Nas mentioned, that you guys mentioned. Listen, over 19 seasons, they went to the playoffs 18 times in 19 years, and they were 5-0 in the Super Bowl. They made 5 Super Bowls. They won all 5 of them. They had a win percentage of 70% while Bill Walsh was their coach and George Seifert was their coach over that, essentially 20-year period. So, once again, sustained excellence. And then number three for me, this is a little bit maybe a blast from the past. Maybe I'm throwing them in, guys, just to be a little bit different, if you will. But the third team on my list is the Cleveland Browns. If you go back and you look at the Cleveland Browns from yesteryear, and I granted it's been a long time since Cleveland's been good, but from 1946 to 1969, guys, this team made 13 title games and won 8 of them. They made the playoffs every single year. They went to six straight AAFC, which was before the two leagues merged. They went to six straight AAFC championship games, won all six. In 1946, they merged with the NFL, and they went to three straight title games after that, going 47-4 over that next three-year period, or over the stretch, that stretch run. So it just goes to show you, it wasn't just the AAFC. If all of a sudden they would have joined the NFL and they would have fallen off the cliff, can't really consider them. But when you look at the talents that they had on that team with Otto Graham and Jim Brown and some of the other guys on that roster, you know, managed by the late, great Paul Brown, it's hard not to understand why Cleveland fans have just absolutely been appalled at what has taken the field over the course of the last, we'll just say 20 years, because I know that they had some moments in the 80s. But, yeah, you know, it was a pretty big history lesson for me. But, yeah, there is some very, very good stretch runs out there. A couple honorable mentions, guys, that nobody mentioned that I think is worth noting. Chicago Bears from 1920 to 1950 compiled a record of 259-88, a 72% win percentage. They went to 10 title games and won seven of them, and that was under George Halas. You know, obviously, we're all familiar with Chicago. You have the Bears of the 80s as well. You know, we mentioned Dallas, which I do appreciate, from the 70s and the 80s of the Bill Landry era. I said Bill
and
Tom
the 90s
Landry.
It's going to get technical in the 90s.
Yes. And then you have the Green Bay Packers under Vince Lombardi, guys. We've already talked about the amount of Hall of Famers they had on their team, but they did over the course of 12 years compile a record of 163-59, eight playoff appearances, seven titles. They were 6-1. Also impressive. But the one that I actually, thought was I had kind of forgotten, because you forget because how bad they've been recently, is the Raiders, the Oakland/Los Angeles/Las Vegas Raiders. Everybody forgets when John Madden took over this team won 80% of their games. They went to 17 playoffs appearances out of 18 seasons and went to four Super Bowls and went 3-1. This was a team, you know, led by Kenny Stabler. You had Hendricks. You had a lot of the nasty guys up front, Mel Blunt. You had, hard-hitting, fast players. That's what the Raiders, their mantra was. And you know what? For everything that is negatively said about the late, great Mr. Davis, he built a hell of a franchise, especially during that time frame. And this one right here, the last one, guys, this one caught me a little bit by surprise. Some of you guys may have think of this, but when I think of great franchises, I didn't really think of this, but when you compare the numbers, it's pretty impressive. So from 1993 to 2016, the Green Bay Packers, 19 playoff appearances, three Super Bowls, they're 2-1 in those Super Bowls, and they've made six NFC championship games during that time frame. They've won 70% of their games, going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and they've been very, very dominant. Nobody thinks about that as a quote-unquote dynasty. But from 1993 to 2016, they've been the model of consistency. So another franchise that definitely, has left a mark on the league. I think all of us would say, hey, in 19 playoff appearances and six NFC championship games, I'd like to have seen you get to the Super Bowl more than three times. So, Norm, I'll kick it back over to you. I threw out a few things there. Actually, hold up one sec, Norm. Before I kick it back over to you, Mr. TP Timeless is in the building, so I'm going to go ahead and bring in Timeless. T- Ty, how you doing tonight?
Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is a lie. Yo, y'all up here talking about Dynasty. Yo, y'all ain't talking about Detroit yet? Man, wait, hold on, man. I know y'all ain't walk up in here. Y'all ain't trying to talk about my boys because you just went. You just went to the 1920s
Hold on, are we talking about hockey? Nobody talking. I've been knocking at my own door. I'm knocking at my own door. Like they've been partying, and I can't party. You know what I'm saying? So they went up in there through the 20s and the 30s, and they ain't want to talk about my boys. Like, we ain't been working the 50s. Feel me? Like, we got four of them things. And y'all ain't talking about Dynasty four in a decade? Like, come on, man. I'm a cook, too.
No.
Right or wrong? Am I lying in the 50s? 50, 52, 53, 54, 57.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
that's a decade of a dynasty, baby. Like, and if Siri's going to talk, but hold on, if Siri's going to talk, look at Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau did things in Pittsburgh, and he came from where? Feel me? Like, y'all got to understand what this right here is about. You know what I'm saying? I'm from Marcy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to watch it even happen no longer, man. For real.
So, word up. But we were talking, the problem is, though, is that we're talking about the top three dynasties, and they don't make the list.
Okay, but I'm just saying, you said honorable mentions. I'm giving you an honorable mention. Like, you're going to mention them. That's four in a decade? Who else did it? Who told
me? All right, well, then you just mentioned them, so I didn't have to.
Okay, I'm a chef. I'm a cook, man. I do this. Don't do that to me no more. Don't do that.
So, Ty, you gave your honorable mention of Detroit, so give us your top three dynasties in the NFL.
This tough, man. I got to go with Pittsburgh of the 70s, I got to do that. I got to do the Niners in the 80s. I got to go Brady in the 2000s. I really want to say Dallas for the other third, and that's no specific order on 1, 2, 3. I'm just trying to get them all quickly so I don't take up too much time. But I think it's San Fran of the 80s, the Steelers of the 70s, and the Patriots from what they was able to do for 2000, 2020, like, for them to be for a 20-year span, for them to make 9 Super Bowls, that's unheard of. That's heavy.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny just doing a little bit of research for the show, and like I said, Nas brought up a great point that they're the only dynasty that has done this during free agency, and that's big because when you get lucky like the Steelers do and you draft 4 Hall of Famers in one draft, you get to keep those 4 Hall of Famers their entire career. You know what I mean? As opposed to the Patriots, who I went through the numbers earlier, have lost 14 Pro Bowlers and 8 All-Pro players since 2001. These are players that have went to other teams that are no longer on the rosters that were Pro Bowlers / future Hall of Famers. I mean, that level of player, and they just walked out the door. So it is something that you have to consider when you're looking at the list. And the fact that the only 2 years that the Patriots missed the playoffs was year one of Brady starting as a full-time starter. They went 9-7, and the year he got injured. Those are the only 2 years in the last 20 years that the Patriots have missed the playoffs.
And then think about like the when they stubbed their toe, I think it's 11 or 12 AFC championships. So they was at the doorstep almost every time. I think it might be more than that.
Right.
Like they are at the doorstep every year almost.
Right.
I'm sorry.
So, I
just seen this.
Go ahead, Ty.
No, I came here with a plate. That's all, man. I heard that they was up in here. Nas in the building, too. Everybody up in here eating, man. They got Georgia, everybody. And then they got old Aaron over there, man. That's man. You got Aaron in here? Goodness.
So,
So I got one last question for you guys, and this is something that we briefly touched on earlier, but we really didn't get into. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I got Nas in the building, I got Ty in the building, I got my boy Sirius, and I got Mr. Norm Arendez in the building. And I think this is important to talk about. We talked about dynasties. We talked about dynasties on this show, and dynasties is really, if you think about it, all about legacy. And what two men are more attached at the hip than Bill Belichick and Tom Brady? So my question, my closing question to you guys is, and Ty, I'm going to start right back with you, is if one of these two men were to have a bad season this year and the other one had a good season, whose legacy takes the bigger hit? So let's say Belichick and the Patriots win a Super Bowl this year and Tampa Bay plays awfully, or vice versa, Tampa Bay goes to the Super Bowl and wins and the Patriots play awful. Whose legacy takes a bigger hit with these two finally not attached at the hip?
I really want to say neither, because Tampa Bay's defense still got to prove themselves. Like, Brady could go up there and have a decent season, but he's still going up against some good caliber teams down there in the South. But I really want to say, if I had to pick, I'd say Belichick, because everybody's still there but Brady. Like, Brady's going to a whole new system, like, and he's starting fresh. All he's getting is now, as y'all probably talked about, Cam Newton's coming in the door, and he's basically another threat in that run-pass option offense. So I think if Belichick comes up short, then the question lies all in his face on it was Brady or bust. So we'll see. But if I had to pick two, I really want to say neither, but if I had to pick, if it went bad for the Patriots this year, I think Belichick would face more fire than Brady going to Tampa Bay.
All right, Nas, I'm going to come over to you. Similar question. The only caveat is like Ty said, I mean, you're talking about returning a defense that was the number one defense in the NFL, and now you sign Cam Newton. Is there more pressure on Belichick now that Cam Newton is signed to be the division winner and to go far into the playoffs? And then, as I asked Ty, what do you think as far as legacy and who takes a bigger hit if they perform poorly while the other one performs well?
Yeah, well, the expectations for the Patriots don't change until we know if Cam is healthy or not. If Cam is healthy, the expectations go up. But as of right now, the Bills are still favored to win that division. I think Ty got it right at first when he said, you know, you can't really say made men already. You can't unmake them, to it, especially right now where they're still active. Brady has possibly, what, 2 years? Bill's going to be there a while until he's tired and wants to leave. So Bill, no matter what, is going to be around. And with legacy only matters after you're done playing. Are you still playing or still active? Who knows what can happen? If we did the last year of O.J. Simpson's career, we were talking about his legacy after he was done playing. How different would that sound, not knowing what we know now about the juice? You see what I'm saying? Like, legacy has to be when they're done.
All right, good point, good point. Sirius, I'm coming over to you with the final question, and I think Nas brought up a good point. So my twist for you is, with Brady retiring in the next couple of years and Belichick potentially coaching a few more years, do you see Belichick or Brady winning any more Super Bowls? And if so, how many?
You know, honestly, I think if anybody were to get there and win it would be Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, for the simple reason the AFC, you know, this Patriot team is not constructed to beat the likes of a Kansas City. It's not constructed to beat the likes of a Baltimore. You know, we saw what the Tennessee Titans were doing. You know, Houston's on the come up. You know, and I get it that, you know, the NFC, you know, does pose some more competition for Tom Brady, but, you know, you do have the horses that you have out there with Gronk, security blanket, with Chris Godwin, with, you know, Evans and company. You do have, you know, the head coach and Bruce Arians, who is an offensive guy. So I do believe that Brady will have the better opportunity because of the sheer weaponry around him, you know what I'm saying, to get to a Super Bowl and to potentially win one. But, again, I'm not sure, man. To answer the first question, I think, honestly, gentlemen, I think no matter what happens, Bill Belichick's legacy is solidified. I think that, you know, what he's done for that organization and throughout his career is solidified. You know, I get it. Tom Brady has been to 9 Super Bowls and this, that, and the third. But, you know, there's always going to be that question mark and that asterisk, you know, next to his championships, you know, because he did get some help along the way. And so I think that, you know, Tom Brady needs Belichick more than, you know, the other way around, and we're about to figure it out.
All right, Norm, so your final question, and I'm going to piggyback off of what Sirius just said. When everything is said and done, as Nas just said, how much will Deflategate and Spygate, do you think that will affect guys like Brady or Bill Belichick's legacy? Is this something that we're going to forget about, or is this something that as football fans, as Sirius said, we're going to have an asterisk next to their name?
Yeah, as far as a legacy, what's done is done. They've put their names in the record books, and you know, the stats will always support them being as great as they were. You know, as far as if let's just say if both of their teams tank in the next 2 years, I would have to say Belichick will take more of the, I guess people will remember it. And I think it has more to do with Belichick just being a non-likable guy. And you know, I've seen some documentaries where Belichick's actually talking and being a normal person. He's probably a pretty good guy. But he just comes off with this just, you know, hoodie sweater, grumpy face, I won't talk to anybody. He just comes off like a dick to most people. And that's how he's going to be remembered. He's always remembered for, oh, that's Bill Belichick. Oh, that's his way. Oh, that's how he is. Whereas Tom, even though Tom wasn't like this Mr. Nice Guy, he was a little more, I guess, accepting on interviews, a little bit more talkative. And so I think people will forget a little bit more of Tom's failures than they would Belichick's, because Belichick's one of those guys, I you know, and I don't hate Bill Belichick, but I love seeing him lose. It just excites me. When Vrabel ran down the clock on him, that was my favorite part of that game they had. He got a taste of his own medicine. So, you know, why did I like that so much? I don't know. It was Bill Belichick. So I just think that people would remember that more. But if you went to the stat books and you talked about, you know, legacies, you can't take anything against either of them.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think that you can't call the Patriots, you know, one of the top three dynasties, which we all did, and not, you know, in the very next sentence or two, talk about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You know, it's funny because so often I think people try to, especially in the media, they try to look at a quarterback or a coach and say, well, who deserves more credit? Well, tell me one dynasty where there wasn't an exceptional coach and an exceptional quarterback. The Niners of the 80s with Joe Montana and Bill Walsh. We've already talked about, you know, Vince Lombardi, Bart Starr. We've talked about, you know, Miami and Don Shula and Dan Marino. You know, I mean, you can go on and on, you know, with, you know, Terry Bradshaw and Chuck Knoll. I mean, they go hand in hand. You can't be a dynasty if you don't have – everybody wants to talk about, oh, you need a center. Oh, you need a corner. Oh, you need an edge rusher. Really what you need is an elite quarterback and a head coach who understands the game better than anyone else in the league, and you have the makings of a dynasty. That's my thoughts. But we only have a few minutes left, boys, so I'm going to swing this back around the horn. Ty, I'm going to shoot this over to you first. Any final thoughts, anything that you want to shout out or anything before we get out of the kitchen here tonight?
No, I missed a lot, man. And, you know, I want to see how this situation turned out with Cam up there in New England. like I said, he fits right into that run pass option, and just think Cam Newton with a line in front of him. Like if Brady got to sit back there like a statue, just picture Cam getting able to run wild to sit back there and pick them apart. If he could get that time, it'll look like him back in Auburn, hopefully. But like Nas said, if he's able to run, and Sirius still stuck on Brady gotta prove something with his legacy? Are you out of your mind, man? I don't know what else needs to happen, man. Tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again, and if they don't know, now they know.
All right, thank you, Mr. TP Timeless. We appreciate you. Nas, I'm going to come over to you, man. I always appreciate you stopping by the building. Any final thought here before – oh, I think we just lost Nas. Sirius, I'm going to come over to you. Any final parting thoughts? I appreciate you being here with us the whole show, man, and all your words of wisdom and thoughts. Any final thoughts on the show tonight?
You know what, man? It's such a pleasure to be here with you guys, man. Fingers crossed the month of July proves to be the ray of sunshine that we all love. You know, baseball back, NBA back, training camps open. You know, the little bit of ray of sunshine that we've been missing in 2020 is set to come back. So definitely y'all be safe, man. Make sure you tell your loved ones you love them. Give hugs and kisses when you know where it's necessary, man. And Lord willing, we'll be back in the building another time to do the thing we love, man. God bless you. See you guys soon.
All right, thank you for that, Sirius. And Norm, I'm coming over to you, buddy. We started the show together. We end the show together. Give me a final thought. Anything that's on your mind while you're 2,000 miles away from me right now.
Yeah, you know, you made a really valid point how, like, you talk about dynasties and you have a great head coach and a great quarterback, and it just reminded me of how close the San Francisco 49ers were. I think it was around 2015 when they decided to roll out with the likes of Alex Smith and my favorite, Mr. Jim Tom Sula.
Sure. I think we're having some phone trouble. All right, Norm's gone. No, Norm, I always appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. And, yeah, you know, Tom Sula's definitely up there. You know, I'm probably just below Bill Walsh in 49ers lore, but I do appreciate that shot you give me once a week just to remind me that I'm awake. Sirius actually said something that I want to end the show on, and I appreciate you boys sticking around. And I know Timeless will utter these same words, but I lost someone very close to me this week, very unexpectedly, very young, under the age of 45. And myself and my wife, we were just talking about reaching out to this person a couple of days before he passed, and I got busy and I didn't, and I regret that now. So I would just encourage everybody to be mindful. We all get busy in our day-to-day life. Never stop picking up the phone, calling your loved ones, saying hello to your friends, because we never, you know, today the present is the only thing that we know we have for sure. Tomorrow is uncertain. So live every day like it's your last. That's all of us here at the Sports City Chefs Network. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.